offering our most humble and loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we are joining you for this week's afternoon satsang. And as part of the satsang team from the Radio Sai section, it is me, Prem, from Team Radio Sai, and Arvind. And as always, all of you listening are also very much part of this afternoon satsang team. So, seeing this and thanking Swami for giving us yet another opportunity to come together and think about the beautiful message that Swami has given us, this is Prem welcoming all of you and my brother Arvind for this week's satsang. Sai Ram, Arvind.
Sai Ram, Prem. And Sai Ram, dear listeners, well, this week, you know, according to our plan that Prem and me have here, it is, we had thought that every two weeks we'll have Satyam Shivam Sundaram, which is Swami's life story, and then the next 2 weeks we would deal on different topics and different aspects of Swami's teachings. So according to that schedule, today happens to be a non-Satyam Shivam Sundaram day, which personally I'm not a big fan of, because Satyam Shivam Sundaram is so beautiful, you get lost in the stories of Swami. But it is also important that we have a separate study circle like satsang, where we discuss Swami's teachings, because it is Swami's teachings that actually take us closer to Him, and Swami's stories help us in assimilating His teachings and putting them into better practice in our own lives. So, for today's topic, what happened was something very interesting. Some time ago, we had a listener write in with three questions. Listener Viji Suresh, she wrote to us asking three questions which were very pertinent, and these are questions that we are sure that bothers us as well as so many other people all around the globe. So, Prem and me thought, why not take up these three questions and just share our thoughts on it. Right, Prem?
Yes, Arvind. And very interesting questions indeed. I don't know whether the questions sprang out of any of the discussions we had earlier, but definitely thought-provoking questions. And in fact, we had in our own humble understanding given a few answers to this listener. In fact, specifically said that she would be very glad if we personally answer these questions. And she also, of course, insisted that we should take this up for discussion later, which we are very, very glad to do now, because they're very important questions. In the sense, it made us think, and it made us explore within some of the things which Swami has told. And I think that's the interesting thing about these questions. I mean, any questions for that matter, because it kind of excavates what knowledge is already there in us, where Swami has put it in us. But unless we inquire and we dig it out, sometimes we don't know that it already exists inside.
And so let us present the results of our digging. And as always, these are not something like a global solution where 1 plus 1 is 2 or 5 minus 4 is 1. These answers are not answers as that. These are solutions that we have derived out of our own understanding, our intense discussions. Trust us, dear listeners, that we have spent hours discussing this subject, debating this topic, going through Swami's literature, revisiting experiences that Swami has given, and trying to come up with some answers. So, as a disclaimer, if I can say so, these are not comprehensive answers, these are not the only answers, but these are definitely a way, a perspective to look at these questions. With that disclaimer being said, I think, Prem, now we can go to the actual three questions, if you can state them in the order in which they were asked.
And just adding to what you said, definitely these can be debated further. As you said, it's not the last word which we can give or we are giving. And we even hope that people debate this even further and enhance.
Yeah, that's the idea. Dear listeners, the idea is that we do not conclude the debate here. We hope to trigger off the debate here, and we wish to receive your feedback in the dozen so that we can incorporate that and we can bring it up for further fresh discussion.
Okay, going on to the questions, three questions, and each one more scary than the other.
Okay.
The first one is, what is the difference between self-respect and ego? How do you differentiate between self-respect and ego? The second question is, if God is good and is the source of everything, then what is the source of evil? Does it even exist? So I'll just repeat that question. If God is good and is the source of everything, then what is the source of evil? Does it even exist? So that's the second question. And the third question is, Swami says, if we point out that if somebody is bad, that means that quality is there within us. But if you call someone a thief by virtue of their actions, does it mean we are also thieves? Swami says, if we point out that if somebody is bad, that means that quality is there within us.
Correct.
But if you call someone a thief by virtue of their actions, does it really mean we are also thieves? I think the last question may be an offshoot of a discussion we had earlier. Maybe we'll come back to that later.
Yeah, correct. We had a discussion on how Swami in Trayi Vrindavan had said that if you criticize others and point out faults in others, then a time will come that you will start seeing that fault appearing in you also.
Right.
And the same time, if you are, appreciating somebody for the good that they have, then you will see in due course of time that good quality arising in you also. I think the third question is an offshoot of that discussion.
Right. So hopefully in answering the first two questions, I think the third question may be answered by itself, but let's take it as it comes. We don't know how much Swami wants us to discuss about each of these questions. And as we have known before and we have seen before, it is only He who decides how much we say and what we say.
Correct.
And it's a revelation to us too. So coming to this first question, Arvinda, the difference between self-respect and ego. You know, even as I was just wondering how to begin this discussion, I was reminded of a very interesting incident which happened in my first or second year of undergraduation when we were studying in Vrindavan. And just to quickly say how the composition of classes are in Vrindavan. Generally, you have this commerce section and the science section, right?
Correct.
So the commerce section would ideally have about 40 to 50 students, the Vrindavan campus. And the science section, you would again have the
Physics,
maths and chemistry.
And bioscience.
Stream, and then the bioscience streams. Mm. So that would be about again 30 and 15 or something like that.
Overall,
15.
Yes. So overall it will come to about 100 to 110 students.
And I belong to the, the bioscience section. So invariably in a class we would have about 10 to 15 students.
Correct.
And then when it would be a chemistry class, we would have a combined class. So that will be about 50 in a class.
Correct.
But it's only during the awareness class where you would have the entire batch sitting together, about 100 of them sitting together.
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay, and that would be once a week or twice a week?
Twice a week.
Right. So that, that itself would make the class one of the noisiest classes. Right? We would, that is the time we all would get together as a class and there would be a lot of chit-chatting and all that. So I remember one of those first few classes, the warden of the campus, Shri Narasimhamurthi, he used to take the class. So he said that, make sure that you don't make so much noise, you're becoming very noisy. And he was a very understanding person, He knew that it would happen, it's a natural thing. So he very politely said, don't make so much noise, especially before the teacher comes. So just make sure you maintain a bit of silence. So the next class when he was coming, then again we were making a lot of noise. So one of the boys in the class, one of our classmates, he went up to the stage. And as if you would remember, there would be a mic.
Correct, because to address 100 people,
yes,
it was not possible.
It was a gallery. We used to call it the A1 gallery.
Correct.
So this boy went up to the mic and he was trying to get the class to be quiet. So he was saying, boys, don't make noise. And then in the course of that, telling us to keep quiet, he said, see, last time also, wardens have mentioned that we're making too much noise. We shouldn't make noise. And he said, have some self-respect and maintain silence. Okay, he said that and there was about pin drop silence. And apparently, the warden who was walking in, he heard this statement. Okay, he came in and he said, I heard what that boy was saying. And he said, I'm very glad that he used the word self-respect. And he said, it's a very nice thing that you discipline yourself with self-respect as a guiding post.
In fact, this advice given to use self-respect as a guiding post, it is an example that is very, very close to Swami's heart also. Off and on many discourses he has mentioned the example of Abraham Lincoln.
Very true.
So he says that Abraham Lincoln was born to a very poor family, and he did not have a father. So it was only his mother who was taking care of him, along with his siblings. And it was a very hard life for the mother. She would stitch some sweaters and knit some sweaters and clothes, sell that, and whatever little money she would get, she would try to educate Abe, as he was called then.
Mm-hmm.
Swami also used to refer to him once in a while as Abe. To educate him, that was how the mother was struggling. At that time, you know, because he's coming from such a poor background, it is natural that he did not have proper clothes to wear. Proper in the sense, matching the fashion of those days, and brand new clothes. So he was often mocked in school. All his classmates would tease him, and that was when, you know, he came to his mother crying, because he had no other place to go to. And when he would cry to his mother saying that, you know, I am teased this way, I am troubled like this.
Right.
His mother would say that they are teasing you because they tell you don't have this, you don't have this, you don't have this. But there is something that you have which nobody can take away from you, which will remain with you forever unless you choose to give it away. And what is that? That is self-respect. Mother said, have self-respect. Everything else will come. And Swami goes on to say that the self-respect that Abraham Lincoln had, that which he got inspired to cultivate within himself because of his mother, that is what saw him becoming one of the, not one of the leading personalities of USA alone, but one of the leading personalities in the world. And I feel Abraham Lincoln is so special because so many times Swami has used his example in discourses. He must have really been very, very...
Yesterday when I was trying to see what Swami has told on this topic of self-respect, at least four discourses I went through where Swami is talking about self-respect, and every time the example which Swami was giving was Abraham Lincoln. And you know, in the example of Abraham Lincoln and Swami using him to explain self-respect, there are two things. You know, of course, he did become the president of, you know, arguably one of the most influential countries in the world. But Swami was referring to his self-respect during a time when he was nothing.
Correct.
You know, during a time when he was just a small boy from a poor family who did not have any achievements. In fact, if we go through Abraham Lincoln's life, it had more failures than success.
Correct.
Because he lost so many elections and he had a lot of tribulations.
In fact, I remember that's in a book called Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Right.
That is one inspiring story that is put. Like, he lost as a senator, he lost in this, he lost in legislative. There are about 10 losses, one after another, after which, suddenly out of the blue, he became the president of the United States.
Absolutely. So, but here Swami is talking about self-respect during that point of time in his life when he was absolutely a nothing. So I think that was also one of the answers which we gave to this person. We said self-respect does not depend on what you are or who you are.
Exactly. That is one touchstone by which we can discriminate whether it is ego or self-respect. That is, it should not depend on who we are or what we possess. Another point here is, I think that when we get this confusion between self-respect and ego, Swami has beautifully mentioned what ego is. Ego, Swami says, is nothing but wrong identification. When you wrongly identify yourself with the body or with your position or with your status, that is ego. But I think in this case, when we say a confusion between self-respect and ego, it is more like a confusion between self-respect and pride.
Right.
Pride in the negative sense.
Right.
We are proud to be Indians. We are proud to be devotees of Swami. That's a kind of national pride. These are, I mean, kind of, if you can say, a positive pride. But here, I think in the question, it's more about self-respect versus the negative pride. And pride is one form of ego, that's all.
Right. And you know, again, talking about self-respect and what Abraham Lincoln's mother told him, she said that nobody can take it away from you if you're not ready to give it away.
You know,
precisely what Mahatma Gandhi said, no one can take your self-respect away if you choose not to give it away. I think that is the difference between self-respect and respect. You know, people may respect you, may not respect you, may give you respect, may not give you respect. But self-respect is something which is independent of what people think of you.
Exactly. But ego is not.
Right.
Ego in the term of pride when we say here. Because when somebody speaks rudely to me, it's our ego that gets damaged, not our self-respect,
right.
Our self-esteem. As you rightly put it, irrespective of the insults that were thrown at Abraham Lincoln, the same thing happened to Swami also.
Absolutely.
Not for a moment, it shook them. At the same time, when people came and sang praises on the face, that also did not, because that also did not, I mean, exalt them into great ecstasy or thrill or joy.
Right.
So, this is another touchstone where we can discriminate between ego and self-respect, because self-respect is immune to what others think, but ego is not. Ego depends heavily on what others think about you. When they praise you, you go up. When they condemn you, you fall down. That's why your ego gets hurt. You get bruised.
That's right. But, you know, we're talking about self-respect. Maybe we should start by saying that what we think that we are. Right?
We spoke of
Abraham Lincoln. We spoke of, you know, many examples of people who were ridiculed and rebuked, but that didn't hurt them. So they must have identified themselves with something which gave them that self-respect.
Correct. Whether it's Einstein or...
Right. Because, you know, you can understand, like, suppose there's a vice president of a company.
Hmm.
His self-respect, to an extent, comes out of his achievements also. It is not completely ego, but, you know, the dignity one maintains comes out of one's achievement and status in life.
Very right. I mean, there is an undeniable connection between self-respect and self-concept. What you think of yourself is what gives self-respect. I mean, if you think of yourself as a vice president of the company because of what you have achieved, worked hard and come towards it, that gives a measure of dignity and respect, you respecting yourself, which cannot be taken away by others. I mean, even if people come and condemn you as a useless person, it doesn't matter, because there is proof of you having worked so hard, having risen up, and over 10 years you have become the vice president. That in itself is a statement. You need not even dignify the critic with a response.
Right. But the only thing is, you know, again going back to the Abraham Lincoln example, Swami is clearly saying that self-respect can still be there no matter what you are or who you are. So
correct.
Then the question comes that what we think is that self. Maybe that has to be looked into.
Exactly. That is very interesting. And one more point that just struck me, Prem, is that, see, even in a vice president, there is something about self. See, according to dignity or self-respect, you will never see the owner or a boss or maybe the president, the prime minister of a nation. They always, they travel in a very good car. There's a lot of security. It may not be the case with a vice president, but a vice president travels in a good car. It will not be good for the company or for the office in which he works. I mean, you can say that if I go and tell him, if suppose I am a pune in that company and I tell him, come with me on my bike, the vice president will refuse. I mean, I cannot take that as a sign of his ego, right? That cannot be considered as his pride or ego, because if there has to be a decorum maintained in office, then that distinction between the different levels that have been brought up has to be maintained. That is why there are, even if suppose, for example, if I have to register a complaint about somebody, there's a chain of command to go through with. I cannot bypass everything and directly go to the boss, because I can approach only one that is higher than me. That I don't think we should take it as a sign of ego.
Right.
But the beautiful thing is, at the same time, if the president or vice president of the company comes and tells me when I'm a pune and says, you know, I will come with you on the bike. Can you drop me home? I'll simply be thrilled. That is what has Swami done so many times. I remember an episode where in the darshan lines, a poor cobbler gives a letter to Swami telling him, it would be wonderful if you can come home and visit me at home. You know, I would give anything that is possible for this chance of hosting you. He, in his wildest dreams, also never dreamt, and he was stupefied and shocked when actually the Mercedes-Benz parked in front of his home, out walked Swami and accepted the bananas that he offered. So, that, I feel, you know, shows self-confidence of a person, that my worth, my value does not come simply because of the chair that I occupy, even if I stoop down or bend down to, I mean that bend down is in quotes, bend down to any level also, I remain what I am. I feel that is also another aspect of self-confidence. It doesn't depend on
absolutely
anything else.
I think from what you're saying, nobody can judge whether what you're portraying is self-respect, self-confidence or ego. I think it is in an individual's purview only alone to judge whether it's self-respect, because I think everything in spirituality is like that, you know, perception. Like a couple of weeks back when we were going through that discourse where Swami was going on insisting on the need to take care of the body. And if you see, actually a good amount of the population takes very good care of the body.
Correct.
But the only difference was Swami said take care of the body because it is the temple of the divine. You know, that perception with which you do that act becomes more important than the act itself.
Beautiful. So therefore, we are nobody to judge whether a person, when he is doing something, whether he is doing out of self-confidence or ego. So this discrimination and distinction should come only for each one of us in our own lives.
Right.
And that is what spirituality is all about.
Absolutely. So maybe, you know, talking about self and our understanding of the self, maybe we can see what is that which the self has to be associated with, and which is the more right thing to do.
Correct. Because self-respect comes out of what we associate ourselves with.
Right.
If I feel I am the vice president of a company, I mean, I am a vice president of the company, and therefore I feel I am the vice president of a company, and therefore certain behaviors come into me automatically.
And does that mean that tomorrow if you lose that job, you're going to lose your self-respect along with the job?
That's a very...
So I think when we associate ourselves with the fleeting things, maybe your self-respect, you're pinning it on the wrong thing.
Correct. Very correct. And that is why I think, you know, in his discourses, when Swami mentions, he says, in one discourse I remember, he said, I will give you a mantra. The mantra had two parts. The first part of the mantra was shocking, if I can say, because Swami said, keep telling yourself, I'm not an animal. I'm not an animal. I'm not an animal. If we think a little bit deeper, here we can see how Swami is guiding each one of us into developing what is the proper and ideal self-respect. Let us not associate ourselves with our positions. Let us not associate ourselves with the jobs we do or the relationships that we hold. But let us associate ourselves with our own qualities. And when it comes to our own qualities, rather than, you know, the first step is removal of the negatives and the bads that exist. Swami says removal of immoralities is the only way to immortality. So for the first step, Swami says, tell yourself, I'm not an animal. Give up animal qualities. Anger, greed, hatred. I often wonder why they are called animal qualities. Because I think
we have patented it now.
Yeah.
We use them more than the animals. But I think, you know, talking of animal qualities, very, very grossly, if we differentiate between animals and man, if you see, animals follow instincts. That is the most obvious animal quality.
Correct.
You know, in a sense, it is good also. But let's talk of it as a very basal quality, because when you're hungry, you eat. When you see food, you go after it. You know, when you see something you want, you go after it. So there is no discrimination or, you know, pausing and thinking whether am I supposed to do this or not. The animal just goes after what it wants.
That's correct. And I think that is the reason why we start associating certain traits with animals. For example, we say don't eat like a pig. Why? Because we see that pigs are generally fat. It's not their fault. It's not like humans that somebody is fat, somebody is thin. Pigs are meant to be that size and they grow to that size. And they eat rubbish. We know that they eat garbage and rubbish. So, you know, we color the pig saying that in spite of having such a size, it goes and eats garbage. So if we feel that there is somebody, in spite of being well fed and who keeps eating at all wrong times, how much ever he or she wants, we tell don't eat like a pig. The pig is just following instinct. It is not human instinct. In fact, humans are not supposed to be controlled only by instincts. Instincts are there, but they are more like indicators. The instincts are indicators for humans, after which man has got something called thinking. So therefore, I feel it would be safe to define an animal as something that does action sheerly based on instinct, and a human who is, and a person who is not an animal, as a person who has some thinking involved before executing that instinct.
Right. In fact, you know, the very example which you gave, eat like a pig, that is a sign of somebody losing self-respect. You know, when somebody doesn't know how much to eat, where to eat, you know, doesn't know when to refuse, when to accept.
Mm.
You kind of look down on a person like that, you know, just about this eating habit.
Mm.
It is not that I can eat, so I eat.
Correct.
Just like how you refer to as the pig. As long as the food is in front of it, the pig will go on eating.
Hmm.
So it is that important thing of, though I know I can do it, though I know I want to do it, I choose whether should I do it or not do it.
Hmm.
And I think, you know, the innumerable examples of, in fact, we were going to Satyam Shivam Sundaram, where this was something, you know, the aspect of self-respect and controlling one's instincts is something which Swami portrayed from a very young age. Though Swami did not portray it very consciously because it was part of him.
Hmm.
You know, when he went without food, he spoke about the cattle fair.
Correct. He did not want to let the fact be known that there is not enough money in the family to be fed.
Right.
He chose to go hungry rather than reveal and get some food for himself.
Absolutely. So that is the point where, you know, even though he needed it, even though he would have been happy with it, he chose not to take it because that would have hurt his self-respect.
So, if, you know, if we become instinctual, completely based on instinct, that means we are behaving like how animals are supposed to behave, not like humans. In fact, I remember in a discourse, Swami used to ask, what is the use of your education? If your education is meant to eke out a livelihood, get food to feed your offspring, and put a shelter on your head, that even the birds and beasts are doing without an education. So education is something that should help you for something grander than just eking out a livelihood. So that in itself shows that we are supposed to be different from animals. And therefore, I think the meanest and lowest level of self-respect or self-esteem we can define. Again, dear listeners, this is what we have arrived at with our discussions. Of course, we are amenable to further discussion. But as of now, we feel that the lowest level of self-respect that you can have is from the lowest level of self-concept, where you feel that you are no different from an animal, where you feel that man is just a social animal, an animal that lives in greater groups than others. That is the lowest level of self-concept and therefore the lowest level of self-respect,
right,
where we feel we are animal. And that is why, you know, Prem, it is a day-to-day happening thing. There are some people who say that when, you know, in Delhi there was that case of women being raped.
Mm-hmm.
And then people justified it saying that women wear provocative clothes, so it is natural that they get raped. Now that, I feel, is something, or a self-respect which is at the level of
lower than animals,
because that's what animals do. Even Swami says even animals have a reason and season for such activity. But when you say that it is there like that, and that is the desire that arises, and therefore it happened, and so it is justified, I feel there we have severely fallen down in the self-respect, self-esteem ladder.
And also, you know, talking about going by instinct, of course, we have categorically mentioned only the basic instincts of food security and procreation.
Mm.
But even otherwise, let us say that, you know, sometimes we lose our temper.
Mm.
We are very quick to point out that I lost my temper because I was provocated.
You know, provoked.
I was provoked to lose my temper. Which again is an example of you acting by instinct. Somebody
Correct.
Irritates you, I get angry.
That is what a dog does. That's what a tiger does.
Right. So, you know, it's not only about food and procreation and safety, but it also means any time when you can be, that is what Swami used to say, that anybody who makes you angry has actually won over you.
Hmm.
Because, you know, he wanted to make you angry and he succeeded.
He wanted to show you in poor light and he did it.
Right.
He showed you that you are equal to an animal. And this is the level at which many of us are. And Swami, that's why he says that the mantra for you is, keep telling yourself, I'm not animal. Speaking of which, I'm reminded of one very interesting incident that happened long time ago. Okay. I think it's about 4-5 decades ago. I remember hearing this from the elderly devotee who is now no more with us. Mm-hmm. He has reached the lotus feet of the Lord. But he mentioned this episode, which happened, maybe Swami was in his 20s or 30s or 40s, I think maybe Swami was in.
Okay.
So, he says that when Swami was in Bangalore at that time, when this devotee went to Swami, Swami told him that he had a desire to own a pet dog. Mm-hmm. Imagine Swami expressing a desire like that. So this devotee was very happy. This was the first time he was getting a chance to hear Swami express his desire, and he has a chance now to, you know, do something for Swami. He said, definitely Swami, I'll get you a dog. Then Swami also had specifications. He said, you know, he wanted a Pomeranian dog. Pomeranian, I don't know how to pronounce it. Pomeranian. That was the breed of dog that he wanted. And so this devotee agreed. He said, yes, Swami, I'll get it for you. Swami said, but only one condition. What is that? I don't want it as a gift from you. I will pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
So this devotee, you know, he was well-to-do. So he thought, what is this, Swami? What is there after all? But Swami insisted. So he said, okay, Swami, I will fetch, buy the dog for you. Then Swami said, 100 rupees, will it be enough? He said, Swami, I think yes, 100 rupees should be enough. Swami said, no, you keep 400 rupees.
Mm-hmm.
Keep 400 rupees. So Swami had given him 400 rupees, and in those days, 400 rupees was quite an amount. And then Swami also insisted that I don't want a puppy. I want an adult Pomeranian dog. So many conditions. But still the devotee felt confident that he would find it. And from that day onwards, that became his project. To locate a suitable Pomeranian adult dog which can become a pet for Swami.
Mm-hmm.
So he went around in his car in the town, in the city of Bangalore, because that was the nearest city, and that is where he was confident he would find. To his utter surprise, after days of searching also, he never came across an adult Pomeranian dog. There were some who were selling a baby Pomeranian dog, but no adult Pomeranian dogs available for sale. He also wanted some dog that's already trained, because he's going to give it to Swami, right?
Mm-hmm.
So after 2-3 days, when he comes, you know, Swami taunts him, says, what happened? We still didn't find. One small dog is all that I wanted. So those taunts are actually even hitting him also. So he's growing desperate and desperate. And finally, during one of his drives, he sees that there is a home in which there are 4 adult Pomeranian dogs. Looks like they have been well trained also and well disciplined. So his heart is very thrilled. He goes and knocks on the door there, and he is welcomed in by the lady of the house. And he asks her, he tells her that, you know, I am in search like this, I want to buy a dog.
Okay.
Now the lady tells him that, fantastic, we are also looking to giving away, but only one condition. What is the condition? The dogs have been, you know, they have been reared together, they have grown up together, so I can't sell you one dog. You either take all the 4 or leave all the 4.
Mm-hmm.
So he starts saying, no, but I want only one. But she says, no, you take 4. It goes on, and this devotee, he says that he was a person of very short temper. He started shouting. He said, what is this you're doing? You're trying to pressurize me, seeing that I'm desperate to get a dog. You're trying to make me buy all your 4 dogs. He started shouting at her. The minute he started shouting at her, she also got irritated. She shouted back at him and she said, you get out. If you don't want to take, you don't. Actually, I'm not the one who is doing the sale. It's my husband who will do the sale. And he, if he comes to know that you're shouting like this, he'll just throw you out of the house. So you just decide. And so he's thrown out of the house. He goes back to Swami. He goes back and he's still in the search. And again Swami asks him. He asks him, what happened? He says, Swami, I'm not finding the dogs only. Swami asks, are you really not finding the dogs, or you are not buying the dogs? Then, you know, Swami knows everything. So he said, yes, Swami, I found like this, there are 4 dogs. But you know, I don't want 4 dogs. He's not ready to sell one dog. Then Swami told him, why are you worried? Did I tell I want only one dog? You didn't even ask me. Buy all the 4 dogs, Swami told him. So he said, okay, fine. So the next day he goes, and because of the bitter experience on the previous day, the minute the lady of the house sees him, she starts like, oh, there he comes again. But this time he says, no, I am ready to buy all the 4 dogs. She says, okay, fine. I'll call my husband, but please don't speak to my husband the way you spoke to me. That's what she says. And she says that he is a person who sticks to his word. So please be careful. And then she calls her husband, who is... apparently who was in the army, who is in the army. So he's well built. And then the discussions begin. The person quotes a price, something like 600 odd rupees, which is much higher than the 400 that the devotee has in his pocket. So he says, let me try to bring down the price. I'll tell him that I'm buying all the four. You know, like we ask for quantity discounts. He's thinking, let me also try to buy Pomeranian dogs in wholesale. So he tells him that everything is fine, I'll buy, but give for 400. Why do you want 600?
Okay.
That person says, what, do you think we are dealing in fruits and vegetables? You seem to be a fool. You have never dealt with pet dogs before. Which was true. I mean, true that he had not dealt with pet dogs before, but that person, he called him a fool and he got angry. He said, nothing, I don't want you. What do you think that only you have the knowledge about dogs? I want this argument started off. Finally, the devotee shouts and tells, are you ready to give it 400 or not? You'll never get an offer like this. And the owner shouts back and tells, you're a beggar. We don't entertain beggars in this house. Get out. When he says you're a beggar, this devotee gets infuriated. He has been licensed to carry a pistol with him, you know.
Okay.
So he draws out the pistol from his pocket and tells, if you speak one more, I'll shoot you down here. Of course, not meaning to carry out his threat, but just to show, put him in place. But what the devotee is not aware is that this person too, being from the army, he walks into a room, comes out with a bigger shotgun. And he says, you brandish that puny weapon, I'm going to shoot you down with this. You get out. And now he knows that he's beaten, so he's just thrown out of the house for the second time. He goes back and again Swami taunts him. What happened? No dogs? He says, Swami, I just not finding the correct dog, Swami. Mm-hmm. That's what he says. Swami says, again ask him the same question. Not finding the dogs? Not buying the dogs. Then he breaks down and he says, Swami, it's not my fault. He was the one who started shouting at me. You know, because he gets onto his defensive immediately.
Right.
And then Swami asks him, that's all right, but who was the first one to pull out the gun? Oh, there, Swami knows everything. Swami says, promise me you will not pull out your weapon. He says, yes. And promise me you will get me the dogs. I'll get you, Swami. And Swami then says, I want those dogs only. Those four dogs, I have liked them. I have seen them now. I like them and I want them only. He says, Swami, now how I will go back, you know, to that house? How will I go to that lady? I have had a big fight with them. Swami says, no, I want the dog. So then what to do? The devotee agrees. He accepts. He goes there. The minute he goes there, that's it. It starts. You know, what we call a sahasranamam. The person starts hurling abuses at him. But he is just holding back because Swami has told him he wants these dogs. After that he says, I'm sorry for what I did. But I would like to buy the dogs. I will buy it at a price that you say. I have no problems. Then the owner shouts back saying, what is the problem yesterday then? Why to finally come to the senses? So add some more insults and then the sale is made. He gets the four dogs and he's relieved that his ordeal of a week or 10 days is over. He comes back with four Pomeranian dogs. And there Swami has apparently stopped talking about dogs. So he says, okay, let me see, maybe tomorrow Swami will ask for it, maybe day after Swami will ask for it. Days pass and Swami is not asking about the dogs at all. Finally, he approaches and tells Swami, you wanted four Pomeranian dogs, I have got them your Pomeranian dogs. Oh, Swami actually, you know, acts as if he is remembering it now. He accepts the four Pomeranian dogs and then on the spot, immediately, as his prasadam, as his gift, gives it away to different devotees who are thrilled to receive this pet dogs from Swami. And the devotee here is shocked. He says, Swami, you made me go through so much to get those dogs. And now you're just having no value for those dogs. You're just giving it off. Swami smiled and told him that all this was not for the dogs. All this was for you. Control your anger. I mean, this devotee, when he was narrating, he said, that much Swami was so concerned about my negative qualities. This anger was my greatest negative quality. That's what he said. And Swami went to this great extent of doing all this drama, so much of thing, so that I don't receive just the theoretical knowledge of controlling anger, but also get a practical experience of controlling anger. I mean, that is the importance and emphasis that Swami lays on rising above being an animal. And that's why he keeps telling us, the first part of the mantra is, tell yourself, I'm not an animal, I'm not an animal.
You know, very true. The thing of anger, again, coming to the point that somebody can make you angry, so you can be provoked to be angry. And, you know, this is a negative trait.
Hmm.
But if you talk of something like love, you know, there's a quote which says, you know, anybody would love a person who loves him.
Hmm.
Okay, even the worst fellow, a criminal, will love people who love him.
Correct.
But what makes one higher than an animal level is when you love even those who hate you.
Hmm.
And I think that is the thing of instinct, you know. When driven by instinct, you're still in that animal level. And that's what Swami is saying, that, you know, you're not an animal. And in fact, Swami used to tell in discourses, you know, that very famous thing of how each animal is led by one sense, the instinct of one sense, into its own danger or its own submission.
Hmm.
Like, you know, Swami would say, the deer is affected by sound.
Hmm.
The moment it hears sound, it runs away. You know, it's so frightened by any sound. So similarly, an elephant is influenced by touch, where the trainer or the mahout, he kind of controls that animal, which is so many times his size, just by that instinct of touch.
The touch at the correct place.
Right. And then Swami...
And because the elephant has a weakness for that sense...
Right.
The whole elephant is being controlled by that one sense.
One sense. And Swami will say the example of a moth. The moth, if it sees flame, it will fly into it, literally.
It is being controlled by its sense,
by its
of,
sense
sight.
Of sight. Hmm. And it's like that, the Swami would give the example of a fish, which is a victim of its own taste.
Exactly. It comes to catch a worm and it's caught.
Right. And like a bee which flies into, you know, Swami would say that there's a blossom. The bee goes and starts sucking honey, and it doesn't even realize that the flower closes.
Correct.
So it is pulled by the fragrance, pulled by the smell. So Swami says, you know, each of these things is drawn by that one instinct which it's not able to control.
Mm. In fact, when you said about the bee, I remember one Sanskrit poem written by one great Sanskrit scholar, in which he says this exact example. He says that man is like the bee that goes to the lotus flower and gets so lost in taking the nectar and imagining that how I will take this nectar back to my family, share it with everybody, we'll have so much fun, that doesn't realize that the sun has set and the lotus flower closes. And that same evening, apparently, he writes that a herd of elephants come to the water hole. And when they come to the water hole, they trample on this lotus flower. And along with the flower, the bee inside also dies. Man too dies in that way, having unfulfilled desires and dreaming of fulfilling all his desires which are based on senses.
My God. I think that is the first stage, as we were talking, of relating to the self, of thinking that I am not an animal. So I think before we go to the next step, because Swami says, Naham Pashu, and then he says...
I think we should tell that. Swami says, I am not an animal, I am a human being. Swami says, not only should you keep away from being an animal, you should affirm to yourselves that you are a human being.
Right.
That is the next step in developing the true self-respect.
Swami says, Naham Pashu, Aham Manushya.
Aham Manushya.
So before we get to that next step and the self-respect which, you know, stems out of that strong belief that I am a human being, we will take a short break, we'll listen to a small song, and we'll come back.
Sharanya Dina Natha
Dina Sharanya Dina
Natha Karuna Sagar Sai Baba Karuna Sagar Sai
Karuna Sagar Sai సాయి సుందర రామా మాయా మానుష వేష ధరే తుమ్ ధరే తుమ్ జయ లీలా ధర సాయి బాబా జయ లీలా ధర సాయి దీన శరణ్యా దీనానాథ కరుణా సాగర సాయి బాబా కరుణా సాగర సాయి సీతారామా రాధే శ్యామా సాయి సుందర రామా మాయా మానుష వేష ధరే జయ లీలాధర సాయి బాబా జయ లీలాధర సాయి దీన శరణ్యా దీనానాథ
Welcome back, dear listeners. For those of you who have tuned in late, well, it's about 1:20 in our studios now. We are currently discussing on a question of differentiating between self-respect and ego. In that discussion, we passed through a phase where we understood that self-respect is very strongly connected to self-concept. That is, what we think of ourselves. And therefore, what we think of ourselves determine the self-respect that we portray. And the evolution of self-concept leads to the evolution of self-respect. And in that evolution of self-concept, we have passed the most basal and mean stage of being an animal. And that through we do that through Swami's mantra, which he says, I am not an animal. So crossing the first stage, we reach the second level of self-concept. And therefore the second level of developing self-respect, where Swami says, I am a human being. So first stage is I am not animal, and the second stage is I am a human being. We have crossed through the I am not animal stage, and now we are in the I am the human being stage.
And before we go to that, very interestingly, you mentioned, Arvind, that with these progressions, that our self-respect begins to harbor on something which is more true.
Correct.
And also what happens is, that filtration between self-respect and ego happens. And whatever your act happens will be purely based on self-respect and not on ego. So I think that is why maybe somebody like Swami, I'm sure whatever he did was completely out of self-respect and dignity. And correct, never was it based on selfishness or ego.
Perfect. Further, going further along this discussion, this concept of I am man actually translates as I am a being who has thinking and discrimination,
right,
between good and bad, right and wrong, permanent and impermanent. That is the difference between animal and man. So I am not animal stands for keeping away from the bad. And what is bad? We generally accept anger, hatred, etc. to be bad. And what is good, we warmth, affection, love, talking pleasingly, all this we take as good. But let me ask a question. Is anger always bad? Is talking pleasingly and softly always good? That's a question to be asked, because we have seen many of our heroes exhibit anger, and when it's a righteous anger, we have praised it. So it is wrong to label anger itself as a bad quality. And generally okay, because when we tell anger, we remember only the negative aspects of anger. But there are positive aspects of anger. In fact, on many occasions, Swami has corrected us, we know it, using anger as the tool, using disappointment as the tool. At the same time, we know enough cases where, we come across people being hypocritical by using soft words, loving words, but actually meaning something inside. So it would be totally wrong to label something as always good and always bad.
And also, if you look at it this way, what is the difference between man and animal? And it is said man is a social animal. So the only thing different between a man and animal is man is social, which means he is an individual who is embedded in a society. So when you talk of morality, Swami says it's Sanghaniti. What is an accepted norm in society?
Yes.
And to go by that. That is what actually defines a man's nature in the society.
Correct.
So that is why, what you refer to as respecting somebody's age. Because this is a question which I've been posed many times. And if you really believe you are not the body, if you really believe that you are a soul which keeps coming back in body after body, then why should you respect age? Why should you respect elders?
Yeah, Prem, I think, this question is a case of indigestion. An indigestion that happens when we shift between levels.
Absolutely.
For example, now we have defined, I can say, three levels of self-respect, which arise from the three levels of self-concept that we have defined. The first level of self-concept is, I am an animal. Second level of self-concept is, I am not an animal. Third level of self-concept is, I am a human being. And we are going to discuss about it, the fourth level of self-concept, where you say, I am divine, I am God. When we exist in one of these levels, and we talk about the other levels, that is when the confusion comes in. I mean, at least I know for sure I have not reached the level of me being God and being able to see God in all. So I feel if I am at the level of I am a human being. So when I am at a level of human being, then the dharma and the rules, the regulations that hold good for this level have to be adhered to. So if I say I am a human being, this person has been a human being for 50 years more than me. And therefore that experience I respect. It would be wrong to shift gears and go being in this level, talk of the other level, saying that, no, we are all God, it's all different bodies, but the same divinity is in all. Why should I respect him? This is just...
No, it's a simple thing somebody was saying, that if you mutilate another person, you can go to jail.
Correct.
Then what about the barber? He's actually cutting a part of your body. But, that is where it is. The question is, it is true, but it is conditional again. It depends on what we're talking about. So that is why, the question of when you say that I am a man, you have to talk of what the society defines a human life as. And whether you are living by that moral principles or not. So even though you are essentially divine, you are essentially whatever level you are in, that is what Swami did, in fact. Swami always maintained protocol. Even in Darshan, when Swami would always point this out also, that a person of certain stature in society has to be given a certain respect, has to be given a certain people were seated differently for that purpose. Because Swami said that was a protocol that happened even in the court of people like Janaka. Janaka was a realized person. But in his court...
King Janaka, right?
King Janaka. But in his court, the minister used to have a certain seat. The lower officials used to have a certain seat. Other kings who used to visit him used to have a different seat.
And the subjects gurus, of the kingdom would have...
Right, and the gurus and the realized souls had a different seat. So even a person who knew that everything is only one, maintain the protocol when he came to the level of governance in the society level.
Exactly. That's why, I mean, Swami also points out saying, you can't tell that the feet have to be above. All the organs in the body are equal, but the feet are below, the head is above. That is because these are based purely on functioning. So for the convenience of functioning, that has to be done. And I also remember, you know, one episode that's mentioned in the Satyam Shivam Sundaram, in which Digambara Swami, Digambars are those people who believe that the sky is their only clothes.
Mm-hmm.
So they are actually completely naked. So it became a sensation when such a Digambar in the 1950s or early 60s, I think, came to Puttaparthi walking the streets, and it was a very strange spectacle, a completely naked man, and he came to even see Swami.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that, I mean, everybody thought, you know, because it's out of the ordinary.
He was actually a Digambara Swami who maintained Akhand Maunam.
Akhand Maunam too, correct. He would never even speak a word. So, you know, people have a way of thinking that a person who maintains or does extraordinary things is extraordinary spiritual also. So they thought this is a great person. When Swami met him, the first thing that Swami did was he threw a towel at him. He said, you wear this. And then Swami said, if you truly feel that you are not the body, and why should you worry about this? And if you feel that God is taking care of everything, then don't stay in the society. Why? Go to the forest. Be there. When you are in society, you have to be clothed. If you are staying in society because you fear that when you go to the forest, there will be nobody to take care of you. That is, you know, Swami's compassion and love. He said, don't worry, I will take care. If you want, you give up society and go to the forest. I will ensure that you are fed, you are kept warm, kept protected. I will take care of you. But don't do this. Don't do this of, you know, staying in the society in this manner, preaching something but not living up to it. That Digambara Swami left with tears in his eyes, tears of gratitude and a lot more wisdom. So, as you rightly said, that protocol, irrespective of the level, Swami was God. But still he maintained all the societal procedures.
Very true. And you know, again, based on this discussion, what we understand is when we say, I am not an animal, I am a man, and you're emphasizing that I am a man, which means it goes by thinking, discrimination, and leading to choosing the right thing. You know what Swami would often say, Shreyas and Prayas. You know, Prayas, you might, Swami would say, is
the easier
doing what
path.
Is easier and what is pleasant. But Shreyas is what has to be done, what is right to be done. And when Swami says, I am not animal, I am a man, which means that you think, you discriminate, and then you take the right decision.
Correct. And therefore, a person who is leading his life at this level of, I am a human being, not an animal, will definitely, when we look in the world, will seem to exhibit greater self-respect than a person who feels that he is just a social animal. It's automatically seen in society. We get to see that. And therefore, this is the logical next step of progression, where we move from thinking that we are not animals to thinking that we are human beings. And I'm sure there are many examples where a person who used this kind of thinking and discrimination has been encouraged by Swami along this path.
And in fact, you know, there's a very interesting incident, but for obvious reasons, we're going to leave out all the names in this incident.
Okay.
But you know, it's a very, very powerful incident where Swami very clearly wanted to show this distinction between self-respect and ego. You know,
okay.
An action which arises out of one's self-respect, an action arising out of one's ego.
Correct.
You know, this happened in the hostel in Prashanthi Nilayam. Once one of the elders, a person who is very close to Swami, happened to visit the hostel on some purpose. And when he went in, he saw this person. He was actually an elderly lecturer in the hostel, who was staying in the hostel along with boys, taking care of boys. And he was also a pretty well-known figure. Everybody knew him because he was one of the teachers in the hostel. So this elderly person walked in and, you know, very slightingly accosted him, and he said, hey, go and get me some buttermilk.
Oh.
You know, from the kitchen. So this person felt that, you know, this is not the way a teacher is treated in front of his students. And more so because he's a Swami's hostel. And you know, he has a certain respect which Swami has given him among his students. And it is not right for somebody to treat a teacher like this. So he said, sir, the office boy is there, you know, you can ask him. He's meant for these work, these this kind of works. You can ask him. And this elder got very offended. He said, I'm asking you and are you trying to talk back? He said, go and get from this one. I'll wait here. I don't want anybody else to get. You get. So this person stood firm and he said, no, sir, I cannot get it. You can, if you want, I'll, if you don't want to ask, I'll go and ask. I'll send a boy to the kitchen, I'll ask him to get. And this elderly person, you know, felt that he was putting him down in front of the others. So he insisted, no, you only have to go and get. So it became a verbal battle and, you know, there was a lot of unpleasantness. And finally, this elderly person walked out of the hostel. He said, I'll make sure that you're thrown out of Prashanthi Nilayam by tomorrow.
Oh my God, what a threat.
Okay, and because he had that kind of an access to Swami, which led to the delusion that, you know, he could do this. So he walked out and immediately the news spread in the hostel. And he said, such and such a sir, you know, had a verbal battle with such and such a person. And it might happen that Swami might ask him to leave. So this rumor was spreading. And that evening, this particular person was sitting in the bhajan hall, this lecturer. And Swami walked into the bhajan hall. And he was not sure what is going to happen. Because I think that kind of a doubt comes to each one of us. Whether what I've done is out of self-respect or out of ego. Now, sometimes I think each one of us also might be clouded by that doubt.
Exactly.
So he was sitting there and he was wondering, what is Swami going to do? And he was describing the scene. He was sitting there with his head down. And Swami walked inside the bhajan hall and there was so much of hush. Hey, Swami's come. You know what is going to happen?
Oh, he's going to kick
you. Anxiety was so obvious in the whole bhajan hall.
And they were expecting Swami to kick him out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Swami might come and tell something. So Swami came and stood right in front of this person. Okay, and this person was not having the guts to even look up to Swami. So he's looking at Swami's feet. And Swami came and very sweetly knocked his head with his knees.
Oh.
You know, kind of asking him to look up. So this person looked up. And Swami straight came to the topic. What happened in the hostel today? So he kept quiet. He didn't know what to say. Swami said, what happened? And mentioned that person's name. He said, what happened with him? So immediately, you know, he knelt down and he said, Swami, if I've done anything wrong, please forgive me. I'm really sorry. And I didn't mean to, you know, hurt that person or be disrespectful. I'm really sorry if I've done anything wrong. And Swami said, why are you telling sorry? Swami said, I'm not angry with you. And he was surprised and everybody around was surprised because he was supposed to be getting addressed down here, you know.
Correct.
Get booted. But Swami said, I'm not angry with you. Why are you telling sorry? And then Swami made a very important statement after that. Swami said, do you know why I'm not angry with you? Swami said, I'm not angry with you because what you did not do out of your ego. And Swami said, that is why I'm not angry with you. And, you know, in Hindi, typically in Swami's Hindi, Swami said, ego nahi kiya na, that is why I'm happy with you.
So, what we discussed earlier comes into the fore again here, that it is wrong to paint something as eternally black, saying that stubbornness is bad, anger is bad, and therefore anybody... So any instance of anger, then that means that's ego. Any instance of stubbornness, that's ego. I think that would be wrong. Because certain times on discrimination, you will have to use anger or you will have to use stubbornness. In this case, we saw how the stubbornness apparently got praised from Swami.
And in fact, you know, even as you say this, I remember one discourse which Swami gave in the auditorium, university auditorium, when Swami was addressing only the staff and students. He started his discourse like this. People say that anger is bad. I say anger is good.
Okay.
People say compassion is good. I say compassion is bad.
Oh.
And then Swami expanded the statement. Swami said, selfless anger is always good.
Selfish compassion is bad.
Yeah. And you know, indiscriminate compassion, it is always bad. And Swami said, a mother's anger is always selfless. You know, mother's anger will always lead to goodness.
Wow. So there we are. So, dear listeners, with this we come to the end of the third level of self-concept. We moved from I'm an animal, from that we moved to I'm not an animal, from that we moved to I'm a human being. And we saw how these three different levels of self-concept can lead to different exhibition of self-respect. And finally we moved to the ultimate state of self-concept where we feel, which Swami says, Aham Brahmasmi, I am God. I am divine and there is no difference between any one of us. before we dilate further on that self-concept, the highest level of self-concept, I think it would be good to take a little break here.
Yes, because what comes may be a little heavy. So we'll take a short break. And actually, this is the most important part of the discussion. And that was one of the reasons why we would like to take a break and come back and deal with that.
Namo Satya Sai Baba. Namo Namo Satya Sai Namo Satya Sai Baba Namo Satya Sai Namo Satya Sai Baba Namo Satya Sai Namo Vishwateja Jyoti Swarupa Namo Vishwateja Jyoti Swarupa Namo Satya Sai Baba Namo Satya Sai Satya Sai Baba Namo Satya Sai Virulu Tarulu Vikasinchinavi Manasutanuvu Pulakinchinavi Virulu Tarulu Vikasinchinavi Manasutanuvu Pulakinchinavi Varusakanilachi Odalalu Madavi Varusakanilachi Odalalu Madachi కదిలించకోరేము నీ చింతనిలచి నమో సత్య సాయి బాబా నమో సత్య సాయి నమో విశ్వతేజ జ్యోతి స్వరూప నమో సత్య సాయి బాబా నమో సత్య సాయి నమో సత్య సాయి బాబా నమో సత్య సాయి నమో సత్య సాయి బాబా నమో
Welcome back, dear listeners, after that wonderful song, Namo Satya Sai Baba. And, you know, taking the discussion along, when we were talking about the stage of saying that I am human, we were telling yourself that I am human, we made a point that, you know, though mentally you might be in any level, in the body level, what has to be done has to be done. In the societal level, what protocol has to be maintained has to be maintained. Hmm. You know, isn't that very similar to what you say when you know very well that what you're doing is a role that you've donned on yourself and acting accordingly?
Correct. Like how I would do in a drama, maybe.
Right. And just discharge what is your role.
Hmm.
And not to think, you know, think whether this person is really bad or really good. Am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing?
You know, this kind of inspiration or ability to do comes at this highest level of self-concept, where you believe that I am God and so are everybody else. You know, there's one more thing, you know, it happens. We have often heard the statement, change yourself, the world will change. Change your vision, the world will change. Somehow what we think of ourselves also determines what we think of others. When we are behaving like animals and we are animalistic, we tend to see everybody else also like that. We see the world as a, you know, rat race where you eat or you get eaten. When you consider yourself as human being, you tend to see everybody around also as human beings, where there is compassion, there is love, there is society, there is bring. You can see that. And that's why for a person, one person is good, but the same person will be bad for the others. It happens because of what is each person's level. Finally, if you go to a level of considering yourself as divine, automatically you'll be able to see everything around also as divine. But before we come to this level of self-concept, you know, where you consider yourself as divine, I would like to share one small incident, mm-hmm. which I think all of us should keep in mind as spiritual aspirants. This often happens, you know, where again, it's the same confusion like self-respect versus ego. Swami was speaking to informally to a group of us, and Swami emphasized, he said that the only truth is, I am God. You have to keep telling yourself, you are God. When I heard this, I felt, oh my God, is this not such pompous boast or a pride if I do that? It tormented me so much that I asked Swami. I said, Swami, if you say that I should keep telling that I am God, I am ready to follow it, Swami, but will that not lead to ego for me?
Okay.
Then Swami said, no, that is not ego. That is a correct truth. But, you know, Swami tells a but. And that's where he puts that cut in your thought flow, and he puts in that important statement. He said, but telling that I am God and therefore I'll do anything is not right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what Swami went on to explain was a very, very, very important clue for us who wish to live this philosophy, live this truth that we are all God. And okay. That clue is, when you consider yourself as God, always take on the responsibilities of God and not the privileges and rights. You know, when we learn swimming or if we learn skydiving, anything that we learn, there are some things we are told. We are told, when you are balancing the cycle, we are told, hold exactly the ends of the handlebar. Do not hold in the middle of the handlebar. Okay. And we are told, always hold the handlebar.
Mm-hmm.
Then we are told, do not sit on either one side of the seat. Sit equally so that your weight falls equally on both sides of the seats. These are some things that are told to us. But, you know, once you have mastered the art of cycling, actually, you know, you can let go of the handlebars and ride it. You can stand on one side of the cycle and ride it. Of course, you can do it. But it's only when you have already attained that level. When you are in the level of an aspirant wishing to attain the level of a person who can be a good cyclist, you have to follow all these. Similarly, you know, when this confusion comes, you feel that if I am God, why can't I slap? Because if Swami slaps somebody, it's correct only, right? So why can't I also simply slap somebody? Is it wrong for God to do? No, it's not wrong for God to do. But you have not yet reached the level of realizing your oneness with God. You are in the process of realizing oneness with God. And therefore, when you are in the process, here are some do's and don'ts. And the only don't that Swami gave was, do not seek or run behind the privileges and powers of God. And the do that Swami gave was, don all the responsibilities of God. meaning being selfless, being compassionate, being loving. I think that should be a nice touchstone for us, or a nice guiding principle for all of us who wish to go to that next level of self-concept where we identify ourselves with God.
And very true, you know, you put it as responsibilities, but you know, what actually we admire God for? We think that it is only the powers. In fact, it is the ability to overlook our mistakes is one of the major things why we get attracted to Swami, if we look at it that way.
Correct.
Because Swami was somebody who was able to look past our mistakes and love us.
And
are we able to portray, you know, that emotion of God?
Similarly, Swami's patience, infinite patience, he always lends a good ear to each one of us, though our own loved people around might have got irritated or fed up with us. The patience that he embodied, that love that he embodied, the ability to forgive, these are the qualities that we admire in Swami, and that's why we are drawn to him.
And you know, when you associate the self with that kind of a God, the way your self-respect will be shown will be completely different, right? It will be untouched by what people think around you, what do around you. And I think it will come out of a supreme self-confidence.
Exactly.
Like what we could see in Swami's life.
You know, this confusion of, if I'm God, can I do this? If I'm God, why can't I do this? I'll do all this. Okay. We use this in a wrong way. So much so that I think this is a universal human fallacy. And that's why we even see many movies having been made on this. I remember a movie called Bruce Almighty, where Bruce feels that if only I was God, I'll do all this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when he thinks of himself as God, he thinks only about the so-called powers and rights of God.
Mm-hmm.
But when he's actually made God, he then realizes the responsibilities of God. And he sees it so much. There are two other movies also along similar lines, where when you first start thinking of I'm God, you start thinking only of the rights. But when you actually become God, you think of responsibilities and the reasons for which you were attracted to God. And so therefore, when we start making our self-concept into this of where we identify ourselves with God, we should always identify, as you rightly said, with the qualities that we admire in God and the responsibilities that God is having upon himself.
And you know, the other thing which Swami would say is, if you are in the ground level, then you have a mountain which is high, you have a valley which is deep, you know, there is water, there is this. But if you see from the sky, if your level of view is so high,
Google Earth,
right, and you actually don't see anything which is higher or lower,
Everything is one.
So Swami says every decision you do and every word that you say will come out of that kind of a feeling. That, you know, you will not be angered by the fact that somebody is belittling you, because that will not matter to you at all. You know, you will not be... That is what happened with Swami, if you see. You know, there was a time when people were inviting Swami for debates, criticizing him and saying that, you know, if you really feel that you are God and you can do anything, come, let's debate, let's test your powers. You know, Swami did not even respond to them.
Correct.
Nor was Swami actually agitated by that those kind of barbs, if you look at it. Because Swami maintained a completely dignified silence, which came out of the fact that, you know, as that very famous quote and very funny one goes, never get down to a pig fight, you know, a fight in a slush with a pig. Because even as you're dirtying yourself, the pig is having a fun, having a fun time. So I think Swami maintained that kind of a dignity because of the fact that, you know, what you throw at me is not going to dirty me.
And, you know, at the beginning of this discussion, you had mentioned about drama and playing a role.
Right.
I think in that there is another hint on how we can actually lead our lives with this self-concept that I'm God. Because another confusion that often comes is, I'm God, if everyone around is God. Because if I'm God, then everyone around is God. Then if everyone around is God, do I go and worship the feet of my taxi driver? Do I make my maidservant sit on the throne? That is where, you know, what you said about whatever, irrespective of whatever level we are in, because we are in a society and because we are what we, I mean, because we have this human form and we are in a human society, we have to stick to the norms. In order to understand this better, the example of a drama would be perfect. See, in a drama, there are heroes, there are villains. And there are, in a drama or in a movie. So suppose in a movie we have the hero bashing up the villain. And that happens, and you can see the anger on the hero's face, you can see the pain on the villain's face, and the hero is hitting him, he kicks him, all that he does. But if we are able to go into the being of that hero, I mean that actor who is acting the role of that hero, he actually has no feelings of animosity towards the other person. He knows that he's also just an actor. And at the same time, the villain too has no animosity towards the hero, though in his actions he's appearing.
Right.
So they are just doing or portraying those emotions because the success of the drama depends on that, that's all. Really, they are dispassionate. They are not having any kind of animosity towards each other. I feel that is how we should bring in this concept of everyone being God into our practical life.
And also, you know, what you're mentioning is a very interesting thing, because we reaching that state is a different, it's a different discussion altogether. Because that involves a lot of steps, and that involves lifetimes of purification and sadhana and all that. But, you know, the truth is given to you. The truth that you are God is given to you. You can also choose to utilize that knowledge in bettering your life.
Correct.
You know, that is what when we say, when Swami says that you are divine, it need not necessarily mean that you have that self-respect only after you reach the state of divinity. You
Correct.
Reach the state of oneness with God. If you can make your decisions based on this truth which is given to you,
you can attain that.
You can still attain that, and you can also display that kind of a self-respect.
It's like that handwriting analysis. They say that seeing your handwriting, your character can be judged.
Right.
They also say that if you modify your handwriting in some particular manner, you can also change your character. The reciprocal also works. You know, you purposely modify your handwriting so that some traits come into you. In the same way, if you are divine, this is the way you'll behave. I mean, Swami lived in the world like the whole world was a stage and everybody is our actors. So his anger was just on the face because that role demanded the anger. But in the heart, he knows that he is divine and everyone others is divine. Everything is one. He was always firmly entrenched in that Advaitic principle that all are one. But because it's a drama, therefore that difference exists, and therefore I have to act it out for the success of the drama. So when a person is entrenched in that divinity, this is how he'll behave. What you say is a beautiful tip, that we start behaving like this so that one day we get entrenched in that divinity.
And I think in this role which we play, I think the time when we get too carried away by the role and forget the fact that we are only playing a role, that is when we are pulled up. You know, the very famous incident of Adi Shankara, when he walks, when he's crossing a certain town, his path has been blocked by Chandala.
An untouchable.
Untouchable, a lowborn. And all his disciples go into a fury and they say, no, you clear the path, this is Adi Shankara. And, you know, you cannot come. And even Adi Shankara tells him that, you know, please move aside because I have to go. And the Chandala makes that beautiful point where he says, whom do you want to move aside? Who is this instruction directed at? Is it at this body? If it is at the body is also made of the five elements. Your body is also made of the five elements. And they both go back into the earth, same earth. So in what way are you? Is your body better than my body? And if you're talking about the Dehi,
The indweller,
then they are the same person. And in fact, actually, if you see, you know, maybe he was going by the tradition and the moral code of the society at that time. What Adi Shankara would have been telling is based on that. But maybe somewhere within, there might have been a little bit of ego in that statement. And out of his compassion, Lord Shiva himself came to correct him.
That brings us back to our original question, which we started off with difference between self-respect and ego.
Right.
So, when we say ego, it comes to the ideal definition of ego, which is wrong identification. So, at the level when you are considering yourself as divine and everyone as divine, the minute you consider, for example, if we think that Shankaracharya considered himself superior than the Chandala because of course, his lofty attainments, their ego stepped in because he lost his true identification. He identified himself with the accomplishments of his body rather than with his true self. And that is why he had to be corrected.
Absolutely. I think that is where we can clearly say that this is ego. Because when you consider yourself in a certain level, like in the level, let's say, I am not an animal. At that level, you actually look at everybody around you in the same level. You say they are not an animal. And when you affirm that I am a human, you look at everybody as a human, and that is why it is so important for maintaining human dignity. When you talk of, you know, you have this Human Rights Commission and all that, it all emphasizes on that. You, whatever the other person is, you actually maintain the dignity of his human life. So even if he's a criminal, you say he's a human, so you have to give him that human rights.
So summarizing all that we discussed now, Prem, can we say this, that there are different levels, you know, of self-concept, which leads to different levels of self-respect. One important rule in this whole thing is, we do not consider what others are doing, what others are saying.
Right.
Because spirituality is all about myself. And so now that ground rule is very clear. When I see myself as a human being, if I see myself as I am a human, then all those instances where I stoop to the level of being an animal or worse than an animal is ego. If I continue to remain in the level of human being, that is self-respect. And fine, whatever higher, what I aspire to be, that you can call it devotion or whatever. So too, if I am at the level of self-concept where I feel I am God, if I am at that level, then any other thing that I identify myself with, if I feel I am identifying myself with my position, I am identifying myself with my wife, I am identifying myself with whatever, my house, my possessions, then that is ego. So ego and self-respect are relative depending on the position in evolution that we are.
Yes, I think definitely you could see that. But I think it comes to the rider. If you again look at that Shankaracharya incident, Adi Shankara's incident, with the progressive, you know, movement in this scales, as you said, I think the more pure you become, more intolerant God will be with you and your ego. Because if you looked at Shankaracharya's, I think that was a time where there was this heavy bias between castes. But that kind of a bias in Shankaracharya was not tolerated.
Exactly.
Because the more pure you become,
correct,
the more strict you will be dealt with.
Exactly. That is exactly what we said, depending on the level.
And that is why, you know, in fact, just adding to that quickly, that is why Swami would say, Mr. Ajit Popat would often tell in his talks, one of the things that Swami told him, that naham pashu, aham manushya, I am not an animal, I am a man. And the third thing which Swami added was, aham sai bhakta. He said that is a third thing which Swami added to him when Swami told him that because you are a Swami's devotee, because that knowledge has been given to you, you will have to maintain your self-respect in that level. And anything lower than that will be treated as an ego.
That's why for a normal human being who feels that I am the vice president of this company, living according to that, from his viewpoint, will not be considered as ego, but as self-respect. But descending below that level, to the level of an animal, will be considered as ego. So, our level, our concept, determines our self-respect and our ego. Therefore, what we think is self-respect and what we think is ego, speaks a lot about what we are.
Absolutely. I think how we judge ourselves and how we judge others
depends on what we are.
Depends on what we are and depends on what we associated this self and self-respect, self-confidence and self-satisfaction with. And that is why Swami has always mentioned that, you know, remember that this self-respect and self-satisfaction and all this should be associated only with the highest, which is the inner self.
In fact, in English we call it self-respect. If we take Sanskrit or any other Indian language, it is called Atma Gauravam.
Right,
and
Atma Gauravam.
The word used in place of self is Atma, which is eternal and immortal.
Right, even in self-confidence it is Atma Vishwasam.
Atma Vishwasam.
So I think...
And self-realization, it is Atma Sakshatkaram.
Right. So the same self is maintained in all this. So when we say self-respect, it always means...
The highest.
But of course, to reach there...
We go through different stages.
These are the stages which Swami has given us.
I think, Prem, we answered only the first question. I don't even know if we answered it. We just had a discussion on this.
Right.
Dear listeners, all around the world, we hope that you enjoyed this discussion. If you did, please tell us which aspects you enjoyed. If you did not enjoy it, please tell us what you did not enjoy so that, you know, we can pray and we can bring in all your thoughts and ideas into this discussion, because as we keep stating every now and then, there's nothing like a right answer and a wrong answer in spirituality, because spirituality is a journey. And on the journey, we meet different things, different aspects, different people, different ideas, different philosophies, and there are as many paths to God as there are beings. So there is nothing like a right path and a wrong path, because all paths lead to Him.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, the incident of the birth of Parikshit, which Swami would often say, that it seems when Parikshit was born, he wanted to see who was that Lord who came into the womb of his mother and saved his life. And he would always look at every person who comes into his, you know, frame, look at the face very intently to see whether was this the person. And that's why his name was given,
Parikshit,
the one who examines.
Examines.
And finally, when, you know, he is given to the arms of Krishna, he looks at Krishna and doesn't take his eyes off him. And Swami says, this is what will happen for an aspirant. As long as he comes face to face with truth, he will constantly keep examining. And he'll be shifting from this logic to that logic. But when he comes face to face with the Lord, with truth, and he will be fixed in that, his gaze will be fixed in that. So maybe till we reach that state, we are given the permission to
keep gazing, keep searching, keep
wandering,
thinking,
and keep searching and keep examining. So that has been our endeavor, dear listeners. This is not definitely not a complete answer to some of these wonderful questions.
And we have thoroughly enjoyed this exchange of ideas and thoughts, and it has provoked so much more within each of us. And we are very grateful to Swami for this wonderful opportunity. We conclude with a song, after which on the other side you will be greeted by Chandu with Love to Love. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
Gama pani
Shabbat.
Shabbat.